Blog Talk Radio.
Carol the Coach. Sex, love, and relationships. We talk about it here.
Carol the Coach. Compassion with contemporary relevance.
I am a psychotherapist. I can be your personal life coach, and I can help you with your issues. There are no problems too small or too big. You can talk about anything.
Speaker, columnist, radio TV host, and commentator. Carol the Coach brings messages of wellness and empowerment within reach of everyday people every day.
Almost 5 years ago, I lost my soulmate in an accident. He was killed in a plane crash. Life just, for me, has seemed to stop.
There are groups all over the city. I mean, I teach one. It is a specific way to start thinking so that you shift how you see the world, which then shifts your energy, and then you feel better, and you actually see things differently.
Carol the Coach. Always available to at carolthecoach.com.
Now, I've got Russell on the line.
I'm 47 years old. I'm a truck driver. I'm married. I have a wife in San Francisco.
Okay.
I haven't been home in 6 months. My thing is, I don't know if I have a sex addiction or what the problem is. Why do I want what I can't have? And as soon as I can have it, I don't want it anymore.
You're right on target when you say, I don't know if I have a sexual addiction. Well, guess what? Yes, you do. And you know what? That's my specialty, Russell, so you're at the right place. Continue.
I meet women online, and I'm in a different part of the country. I travel all 48 states, so I love sex.
I hear self-esteem issues. You never felt good enough, and you didn't feel like you were getting what you should have then, and you're reenacting that now. Do you want to change that about yourself?
And hello there. This is Carol the Coach. I'm Carol Jurgensen-Sheets, and you are listening to Sex Help with Carol the Coach. Hey, this is the only show on sexual addiction offered through Blog Talk Radio, and I'm so happy to be here because I'm privileged enough to get to interview the experts. And we're talking about people that have written books that have dramatically improved the lives of other people. And we're talking about interviewing treatment centers that have specialized treatment programs for this highly addictive disorder called sexual addiction. And tonight we're going to be interviewing Anthony R. Rodriguez. We're going to call him Tony. And he, along with Stephanie Carnes and Mari A. Lee, wrote a book called, I've got it right here, Facing Heartbreak, Steps to Recovery for Partners of Sex Addicts. And I mean, this is a manual that teaches you what to expect when you first find out that your partner is suffering from sexual addiction. And it really goes into the trauma of discovering the problem and how do you manage the crisis, both how do you manage your own feelings, your own reactions, as well as how do you deal with the aftermath, how to deal with the emotional aftershock. You know, initially it's like anything else. You get very numb, then you deal with anger and sadness depending on who you are, and how do you release that shame and manage the anger. And so it's really a step-by-step guide on how to work with this kind of situation. And then it teaches you about sexual addiction and how to communicate your feelings and, most importantly, how to make empowered choices and reclaim your own empowerment, your own life, your own sexuality, and figure out what are the next steps. And I love this book because it gives you psychoeducational information, but then it also gives you exercises to do so that you actually empower yourself with the help of these authors. And, you know, we all know Stephanie Carnes is Dr. Patrick Carnes' daughter. She is a such a talented therapist, and obviously has spent years and years and years and years doing programming, running treatment centers. I mean, she's really done it all. And interestingly enough, as part of this group, we have a listserv which has all the certified sexual addiction therapists on it. And when we have a difficult problem or situation that we want to staff, if we want to find out how somebody in New York is handling this law versus somebody in California, we just put it out there. And all three of these people are just stellar at sharing their opinions and hope, strength, and recovery. So I cannot wait. We're going to be interviewing Tony in about 10 minutes at 9:15. So stay tuned. And if you will for me, please, write down this number. 646-595-3284. That is the number you can call in and get any information that you'd like. You can ask any questions you'd like. You know, we are here for you. And I'm really excited. A man by the name of Sam had written me an email. And I said, hey, Sam, call the show. And he said, oh, I don't really want to do that. He said, but please read my email, and if would you answer it for me, Carol? So I'm going to start out by talking about Sam's issue. He said, I recently found your podcast and want to first thank you so much for giving me a place to help me with my problem. And just for anybody who doesn't know, you can download all the podcasts at blogtalkradio.com/sexhelpwithcarolthecoach, or you can go to iTunes and put in Sex Help with Carol the Coach or Sexual Addiction, Hope, Strength, and Recovery with Carol the Coach. And every single one of my shows will come up. Subscribe to them free, and they'll all download to your iPod or to your computer. Now, he says, there is no question I have a sexual addiction. I have difficulty with porn, online chatting, webcams, and they are all hidden from my wife. I do an okay job trying to stay away, mainly through prayer and reflection of consequence. I am getting a pretty good understanding of my triggers and staying away, but I still need a lot of help, and I slip back from time to time with it escalating each time, as you have talked about. Yeah, I frequently tell people that if you believe you have a sexual addiction and you are able to stop for a while, that oftentimes when you relapse or start back, when you slip, your addiction is stronger than when you left it last. And so Sam is affirming that. And I love the fact that he says he's trying to stay away from it mainly through prayer and reflection of consequence, because we really do ask our addicts to think about the problem, to think about all the secrets that they have, that they keep from their loved ones. And whenever you're not authentic and you keep secrets, you cannot have intimacy. And that's why we say the sexual addiction is an intimacy disorder. He says, you know, I'm not going to tell my wife. I'm trying to stop. She caught me once about 5 years ago with porn. And if I had told her that I'm sorry that it started back up and that I've hidden it from you, I am sure she would leave me. So you asked what happened before age 17. One of the things we like to do is a timeline of what happened to you with your sexual development and in your life from birth on up to age 17. And he said, you know, Carol, I don't think much happened. The only thing I could think of is at age 12 or 13, about three or four times, I would sleep over with a friend and we would touch each other. And another time with another friend. Both of them were boys. Today, I'm just embarrassed about it. I don't remember much feeling at the time. It went away quickly and never really bothered me. Again, it is so interesting that Sam is saying this, because I just told my guys in my sexual addiction group tonight, I said, you know, a lot of times sex play or sexual curiosity with friends, same sex or opposite, is normal and natural. And it's not anything to be ashamed about. But when you begin to obsess about creating opportunities for it, and or you begin to, we had one man today that talked about the fact that he was teaching younger kids what to do, and he was having them do that to him. That then becomes the problem. He says, since I'm not bothered much by it, I want to tell you what's going on in my real life. Presently, my wife only likes sex 2 to 4 times a month. I want it every day, so I would masturbate to release. However, it has escalated as time has gone on. We have 4 kids, and she's tired all the time, and I understand that and try to help around the house and surprise her by doing unexpected things like chores that she normally does. Now, you and your guests have talked. He's talking to me, and he says, Carol, you and your guests have talked about the fact that there are intimacy issues, and I just don't see it. My wife and I are best friends, married 20 years. We hang out every night just talking or watching TV or going on walks. We talk about everything. So I'm not sure where I fit in. Perhaps pre-17 was traumatic, and maybe I do have intimacy issues, but I just don't see it either. So I wonder, if they are not issues, how do I fix them long term? Since I don't want my wife to know about my recovery, I don't want to start trying to hide payments for treatment, and I've been using the free workbooks and your podcasts. Suggestions for what else I should do? Thank you again, Sam. Now, Sam brings up an interesting situation, and he didn't really go into the fact that he's online chatting and he's using webcams. Because typically, if a man is looking at porn and it becomes compulsive, there may not be trauma as a kid. And I've said this before on the show. You know, trauma reenactment usually occurs when you've been abused. However, there are a subset of the population that they're looking at porn, and it becomes almost like a habit disorder. It becomes very obsessive and compulsive, and it starts interfering with present-day relationships. That's different than medicating with porn because you've been traumatized as a kid. So I suspect that Sam has fallen into this category. However, what he doesn't talk about is his online chatting and his webcam use. Because if he's using his webcam to share sexual pictures, to do sexting, to do any kind of setting up situations, that is a problem. And that's more than just internet porn. That's adultery. He is cheating on his wife. And if pornography has been a gateway to create other avenues of cheating with your wife, then I got to tell you, there are intimacy issues. Now, I get that not everybody is really monogamous. And so I would have to ask Sam a lot about his morals and his values so that I could have a better handle on what are his expectations in his marriage and what does his wife expect of him. You know, I work with couples that are polyamorous, and that means that they have many relationships. And if it's not a problem for the two of them, I don't know that I call it sexual addiction. It's when there's lies. It's when you're hiding things. It becomes compulsive. It's when you take away from your own family life to have the secret life. So, of course, I've asked Sam to call the show 1-646-595-3284. He, understandably, is afraid someone would recognize his voice. Now, for any of you listening out there, I got to tell you, if somebody's listening to the show, they probably have the same problem. So I understand that this is all anonymous. Actually, Sam is not his real name. But I do want to tell you that this is probably a very safe place to ask your questions, to dialogue, and get the help you need. And I would encourage Sam to contact a certified sexual addictions therapist in his state. And he can go to www.sexhelp.com, look up by zip code or by state who is certified in his area and get some help for that. So, Sam, feel free to send me emails. Tell me a little bit more about your chatting on the other line. You know, talk about what's going on with the webcam, and hopefully we can help you a little bit further. So I'm going to take a call right now. I do believe that's from Tony. Tony, is that you?
Yes, it is, Carol. Greetings.
Greetings, yes. And you're calling from what state?
The cornfield state of Iowa.
Oh, very good. Well, you know, you're talking to me from Indiana, so I can appreciate that cornfield, as a matter of fact. I want to thank you so much for dialoguing about this incredible workbook. I mean, it's certainly, it does go through the steps for recovery, I'm referencing Facing Heartbreak, Steps to Recovery for Partners of Sex Addicts. So, Tony, what made you decide that you and Stephanie Carnes, and is it Mari Ailey or Mary?
Mari.
Mari, that's what I thought. What made you decide that this book was was needed in the community of sexual addiction?
Well, you know, for partners of sex addicts, they're basically underserved because there's a lot of shame associated with the sexual addiction. There's some treatment and some treatment providers that focuses on sex addicts, but not too many people focus on the spouse. And for spouses, because of their own shame, it's not exactly easy for them to speak to their mother, their sister, their brother, their girlfriends, their buddies about what is going on with their husbands or their wives.
Well, you're absolutely right. They talk about feeling so very embarrassed and ashamed, and then they also don't want their family, friends, or community to be mad at their partners as they're trying to decipher how they feel.
Exactly.
So this is a reference manual that helps partners go through that discovery, that period of their life where they find out that there are these problems, and then, you know, to be able to manage the crisis and look at their feelings and decide what they're going to do to bring sanity back into their life.
You're correct there, Carol, because it gives them a landscape of what to expect. It gives them a sense of direction or compass in terms of what to do next, because going through this chaos, this trauma, they're basically feeling either frozen or basically extremely activated or dysregulated.
Now, in some ways, those are kind of big words. So if you were going to break that down for our listeners who may, for the very first time, be seeking out this podcast to understand a little bit more, talk to them about what they may be feeling and why.
Okay. In terms for a partner, they're probably going to go through different stages.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of crazy making. And it's not because something that they are doing per se, but they're experiencing something, a disconnection from their spouse or partner. And with that, you know, it's because we're hardwired to attach, we begin to feel anxious, suspicious, et cetera. And that's normal because we want to feel stable in our relationship. But as we find out more and more, we're feeling more and more into that chaos. We're slowly sinking to a certain abyss. And we feel more and more dysregulated. And what I mean by that is that we're starting to experience from a body sensation in which, you know, we're feeling tense. Our mind is starting to spin. We feel out of control. We get tearful, drop a hat, or we become very angry or numb. So it's a very chaotic time for them.
Yeah, and, you know, what you're referencing is something we call emotion regulation. And normally we do have a handle on our emotions and are able to regulate them, but when somebody goes through discovering that their partner may have a sexual addiction, a lot of their coping skills go out the window, don't they?
Sure, it sure does. I think part of it is because, again, they're into that shock phase and that they don't know what is going on. And from really an evolutionary standpoint is that our bodies are trying to take care of ourselves, really. It gives us basically a chemical dump mm-hmm. in which you, we are feeling that, that energy, that adrenaline, but it's sort of like instead of like a nice flow of all those hormones, we're mm-hmm. getting basically a waterfall, a cascade, and that's going to impact our whole system. So
well,
we're going to again, go ahead.
Oh, continue.
Sure. So again, we're going to feel anxious. We're going to feel a little bit more hypervigilant. We're going to feel tense. Our breathing may change. Even our the tone of our voice, our speech is also going to change. What I've noticed with some of our partners, they sort of sometimes regress back into their child voice. They're no longer speaking in their adult voice, at least it's for some of them. And partially because of perhaps re-experiencing an earlier trauma or
yeah.
an earlier situation in which, again, feeling surprised, feeling betrayed, feeling neglected, et cetera.
Well, I know that you talk about, you give examples of people that have actually been in the office, and Carol is a woman who called and said, I feel like I'm losing my mind and I need help. And yet she was honest enough to say that she suspected something was wrong for a while, but couldn't really put her finger on it. And then when she got the information, when she figured it out, she did go into shock and then kind of vacillated from anger to sadness.
Mm-hmm.
And thinking that her husband was a big fat liar and getting very, very angry, and she's been numb ever since. So that is a common reaction, isn't it, from people that are discovering for the first time officially that their husband or wife has a problem?
Well, I kind of look at it from this perspective. It's sort of like our belief system in terms of what we count on. For example, that the sun will rise, you know, and it will get darker as the day goes by. That kind of all shifts for us. And suddenly we're in a different world. Well, basically, the sun doesn't rise, and there are maybe three or four moons. And we're experiencing heat when it's supposed to be cold. It's just a very chaotic time in which what we're trying to do is make sense out of something that doesn't make sense.
Right.
Because
and
we're
so
not
in the book, you actually talk about some of the common statements a partner who may be in the process of discovering may say. For instance, you say that maybe a partner says, well, you know, it's no big deal. Every man cheats. Or I'm just going to pretend it didn't happen. Or I'm making too much of this. Or maybe I've done something wrong. Or maybe the partner says things like, I swear, I promise I won't ever do it again. Or I was drunk. Or it's not what you think. And so it can be very difficult for the partner of an addict to figure out what is truth and what isn't true. But you say that there's research that indicates that when sexual betrayal happens, that it's very likely that the body and the brain will be affected by the trauma, and that that's normal. And you help people to figure out how to unravel the situation and how to make sense of it and then empower themselves.
I think part of what the book is trying to do is help them navigate through this, because
mm-hmm.
it's something that really doesn't make sense, and our body is experiencing something that's quite overwhelming, and it doesn't really fit into our regular beliefs or schema or what we had planned in life. So now we're suddenly, as I mentioned, like there's three moons. Well, what does that really mean? For a partner of a sex addict, what does that mean regarding, you know, our past life together? Was it all a lie? What does it mean for our future together? And if we have children, what does it mean for them? Plus, at the same time, you know, they're not in control of their thoughts are getting triggered left and right by either sound, smells, anything visual that may, you know, that may have polluted their mind because they're thinking about, of course, the worst-case scenario. Driving down the highway, you know, is that where he was? Is that the bar where she was, et cetera, et cetera. So
yeah.
our mind begins to kind of like override us, and we feel that we can't manage ourselves anymore.
So one of the things this book does is it offers scales, trauma scales, and exercises, and opportunities to, again, create some sanity out of the insanity. And so you talk about asking clients to check the emotional symptoms of their trauma and the physical symptoms of their trauma. So they may check, yes, they've been confused and they're frustrated now and they're irritable, or the physical symptoms, that shaking or overeating or inability to sleep. And it gives the person an opportunity and a reminder of how they are physically feeling, because oftentimes our clients, partners of sex addicts, will have racing thoughts and they can't really calm it down. So this is a way for them to start to begin to understand what is physically, emotionally, and spiritually happening to them, isn't it?
Yes, and I think that it begins to normalize what's happening to them. That what they are experiencing is not out of the ordinary in regards to his or her circumstances. And I think that's one of the biggest things, you know, partner of a sex addict, they feel like there's something wrong with me. There's something broken inside of me that I can't even manage day to day. And we're saying from this book is that, no, this is just as normal as witnessing an accident. This is just as normal as if you were also physically violated. This is just as normal as if you are in Afghanistan or in a situation in which you're feeling there's a threat to your sanity. So it gives them that they have permission that, oh, my body is trying to make sense or trying to stabilize, but it hasn't gotten there yet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so once they're able to begin to decipher what's going on with them, you do a lot of talking about boundary setting and how important it is for the partner to create some safe and emotional boundaries that bring them back to a sense of some control. And some of those boundaries may look like, I will sleep in a separate bed, or I will not have sex with you right now, or, you know, I will discuss with you what I think we should tell the children, or I want to replace our bedding since you were unfaithful in our bed. Those boundaries are so very important, and I love that this book highlights so many of the things that either will normalize for the partner feelings that they've had or will give them some food for thought.
You're right there, Carol.
This comes from a lot of research. You run a men's center, is that right, Tony?
Well, yeah, it's called the men's center because when I started my practice, my wife and I were thinking of a name, and, you know, men don't really want to go to, like, the center of Kumbaya or, you know, things like that. They want to go to some place that's somewhat benign. So the men's center makes it very benign, but realistically, about 35-40% of my caseloads are women. And I kind of look at it from this perspective, and it's just like your doctor, your lawyer, you know, your mechanic, whoever, that you just feel more comfortable and safe with. But as you mentioned, in terms of boundaries, I think that is just one of the most important parts of the book. Because the way that we establish and maintain boundaries, we erroneously think that boundaries is basically that you, meaning, let's say, my spouse, cannot cross these boundaries. If so, I will consequence you. okay? And boundaries are not really about consequences or in terms of controlling the behavior of the addict. What boundaries are is how am I going to make myself feel safe enough, okay? Safe enough to stay in this home, safe enough to manage my day-to-day activities, safe enough to communicate to you. So it is, again, looking internally of what that means for me to feel safe enough, not for what you should do to make me feel safe. So put the ownership to the spouse. And in doing so, the partner of the sex addict can feel more in control as opposed to dependent on the moods or the addiction of their addict spouse.
Good point. Again, it's that serenity prayer of knowing what you can change. And basically, we can only change ourselves and work on ourselves and our own boundaries. We can't really impose those on anybody else.
No, we can't. And again, the whole thing of ownership is really important. I think it's very natural for, you know, once you discover that your partner, and I interchange partner, spouse, husband, or wife, if you find that person has betrayed you, and it's like, okay, then you can't do this anymore. Well, yes, but it's those four C's that we've learned, that we can't control that person, we cannot change that person, we cannot cure that person, and we did not cause this.
Mm-hmm.
If we could hold on to those four C's, it gives perspective of basically our limitations regarding their status, and it makes us more focused on ourselves.
Yeah, and you know, it definitely gives some guidelines. This workbook gives a lot of good, healthy guidelines as to how do you remind yourself what you yourself can control. I love that it really helps the partner know what is normal and what is natural based on this situation. I also like that it spends a lot of time just talking about sexual addiction in general, because there is so much controversy about, does sexual addiction, is it real? You know, is it a real disorder? And you talk about that in the book. Now, what do you think about this whole concept of addiction? Have you seen your clients go through withdrawal because of sexual addiction?
Yeah, I mean, I do. And I'm not going to be a purist here. What I see, and what, as I mentioned in the book, countless of other clinicians in the field, is that the clients are suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And they're suffering in the same way that we see someone who is, let's say, withdrawing from alcohol, gambling, et cetera. They're feeling very anxious. They're feeling very nervous. They're feeling very moody.
Mm-hmm.
All these feelings. And, you know, my thought is that we're seeing something, okay? And we'll leave it up to, let's say, the researchers to define the specific words to it. But at this point, we just need to treat the individual who will come and sit in front of us and just say, okay, what is going on? And basically, what's going on for them is that they're addicted to a mood-altering experience that allows them to escape. And they are much more dependent to that experience. But the thing is, what's different from like gambling and, let's say, alcoholism, is that with sex, it is core. And it's very hard to basically go to a dinner party and say, hey, this is my spouse, John. You know, he's a recovering alcoholic, and well, everyone's going to say, hey, you know, John, I had an uncle who was recovering alcohol. Good for you. But, you know, if I say this is John and he's a recovering sex addict, then everyone will drop their spoons. Mm-hmm. You know?
The mouth will be ashamed.
It's that shame, and it's because we don't know what to do with it. And again, because sex is a very personal and core issue to our identity.
I think it's that, and I also think it's because, you know, this is not a society where we talk much about sex. We view it, but we typically do that secretly or in our own homes, and, you know, it's just not discussed openly. So somebody who has a problem with sex is multiply shamed, you know.
Well, and I agree with you. And the thing is, they get their education through the media.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, again, very skewed. Now, the same person, same people who would say, you know, that kids today are very sexualized are also the same people in general who would like to watch, let's say, The Bachelor and The Bachelorette or
mm-hmm.
some of these other shows that really skew the relationship. Okay? And then sex becomes more like currency.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to something that can be quite wonderful and quite intimate, it becomes more of an activity in which we get an end to the means, I guess. Means to an end, I'm sorry. So we lose this compassion part, we lose the intimacy, we lose the vulnerability, and all we have is an activity that we can create a lot of sensations in our bodies and in our brain, and we just get more and more addicted to it.
Well, and I agree that most definitely the actual terminology, it matters not whether we call it sexual addiction, hypersexuality, obsessive compulsive thinking, but the true issue is when somebody is unable to stop and it's interfering with their life, it's time to take a look at that. And obviously partners have discovered horrible things about their partner. They don't know who they've married and or who they're with, and so they're traumatized sometimes in the same way as the addict if they experience trauma in their own childhood. Now, half of the book, this workbook is about how do you deal with the trauma? How do you manage the crisis? How do you get a hold of your feelings? And then part of the book is on good, healthy communication skills and understanding your feelings. I know that you really encourage people to journal. And so, you know, as I was reading this book, I thought this part I could give to anybody. To understand that, do I communicate passively or do I communicate aggressively? Am I a passive-aggressive communicator or am I pretty good at assertiveness? I mean, you've really got some good, healthy skills in building a relationship. How did you decide what skills you were going to use?
Well, I think as a team with Stephanie and Mari, we were looking at more what our clients are presenting to us.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many skills out there in terms of how to become a better person, et cetera. But what we're looking at is basically what are the essentials right now? And again, how can we manage what's going on with us in terms of controlling this chaos? So we decided, you know, in terms of first identifying what we're feeling. And once we get to that trailhead, then, you know, we're going to have put words to it. And we're going to take ownership of it, and we're going to share it out of, you know, out of truth as opposed to out of, you know, trying to control someone. So we were trying to at least build this authenticity for the spouses so they have a voice. They learn to have a strong voice.
And, of course, the better they are at establishing their boundaries, the more likely they'll be able then to develop that strong voice that you were talking about, so that they assertively share their feelings and their desires.
It's not just even the assertive, you know, yes, it's assertive versus aggressive.
Uh-huh.
But even to just, again, mark that at this moment, this is how I feel. And, you know, that is goodness. Because what I've noticed, like, with some of, I run a women's forum, and, you know, these are spouses of sex addicts. And, you know, there are different stages of the recovery. And what I'm noticing is that once they begin to stabilize, they're finding the words to just articulate what their experience is like versus sort of like, do you understand it? Listen to me. It's almost a demanding piece.
Mm-hmm.
They're really calm about it. They're just saying, you know, I'm concerned about this. It makes me feel very uncomfortable. I don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
Enough said. You know, and it's not the sense of urgency. But that takes A, time, and B, really sort of like embracing what's going on with you. Because our humanity basically tells us, like, this feels uncomfortable, let's get away from it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's managing this discomfort and then able to really having intimacy, because part of intimacy is able to communicate the discomfort and bearing witness to the discomfort.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, in this book, you talk about something called the Personal Craziness Index, and obviously that was developed by Dr. Patrick Carnes. And can you talk a little bit about that? Because I think it's a great way for people to take a look at their life in general.
Well, you know, the pickiest, as we call it, is really looking at different domains of our life. And the thing is, we don't get to this craziness just out of osmosis. It's doing small things that kind of build up. So we divided things like, you know, your physical health, transportation, environment, work, interest, social life, et cetera. And we asked them to identify, okay, in these domains of your life, name maybe 3-5 things that would indicate that or cue you that things are out of kilter.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So let's say for the finances, you know, I would say something like, well, I'm spending too much money, okay? Or
mm-hmm.
It could be I'm hoarding, totally the opposite. I'm saving too much that I can't buy what I need. Or it could be that I'm spending money on insignificant things or running my credit cards up, things of that nature. So as we look at these behavioral cues, and then once we have all these domains, which is basically like 12 domains and times 5, we have 60 basically red flags. And what we ask, you know, the spouse, the partner, is, okay, out of those 60, name 7 of them that says, okay, these are the signs that tell me that I'm really feeling out of sorts.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that I don't have control of me. So then we could identify what those 7 things are. And we look at it and just say, oh, no wonder I feel out of sorts, because I'm maybe eating more, maybe I'm yelling, et cetera, and this has each of those items that you is identified, have a dynamic relationship with one another, and it kind of spins out of control.
Mm-hmm. And that obviously can be a precursor to not paying attention to your life and to having problems with yourself, with your partner, with your family. I know one of my clients said, when my car begins to get out of control, I know that I'm not leading my life in a way that's going to be conducive to maintaining good sexual sobriety. So it's interesting. I mean, when I think of the picky, I think about how my addicts use it, but you're saying, hey, this can be used for the partners too.
Oh, sure.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing with a circle of behaviors, those things that we use for addicts, we could also use for partners. What are the things that are going to make us feel unsafe?
Mm-hmm.
What are the things that's going to make us feel safe and grounded? And one of the things that in terms of the inner circle, which is basically things that are just very out of control for us.
Mm-hmm.
So we begin to look at cues and behaviors and thoughts and feelings. And again, it's part of our humanity that sometimes we're sad and sometimes we're angry or sometimes, you know, hey, I wouldn't mind eating a bowl of ice cream. But when we have a constellation of these, let's say, symptoms, they have a dynamic relationship with one another, and again, it starts to spin out of control.
Mm-hmm.
So again, for the partner here, it's help them identify all these cues, just like driving, you know, from point A to point B. We use all these cues, these road signs, to tell us we're going, you know, to the right place. We're seeing these speed limits, we're seeing these exit ramps, we're seeing these mile markers. That tells us a direction that, hey, we are going to the place that we need to go to. But if we're sort of like drifting off the highway, we hit those speed bumps and we go boom, 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 and we self-correct.
Yeah.
We're just helping the partner notice what cues that they feel personally that tell them, I need to self-correct here. Not that my addict husband or wife or girlfriend or boyfriend needs to correct, but what do I need to correct?
Yeah, absolutely. And we are talking right now to Tony Rodriguez, and he is founding president of the Men's Center, executive director of the Men's Center in Iowa.
Well, I'm just a founder and a clinical director.
All right, and a clinical director. And he is right now talking to us about Facing Heartbreak, Steps to Recovery for Partners of Sex Addicts. And so now I just want to pick your brain, Tony, from one clinician to another. When I'm working with partners, I typically see two types of partners. I have one partner who is so angry, so hurt, so betrayed that they go into ultra control and they want to review every cell phone record. They want to obviously put a Garmin on the car. They want to know where their addict is going at all times, who he or she has been with. And, I mean, they're just hypervigilant about needing to control knowing what's going on. I know that you've worked with that same kind of partner.
So yes, I have. I kind of look at that again as a protest to the detachment, that he or she at that point is like, I need to control this, and I'm very desperate in trying to control this because it's causing a lot of pain. And I'm noticing that you're moving away from me, and that scares me. So, again, we go to that fight or flight. And for some people, as I use the word activated or dysregulated, they're just basically reacting more. Again, it's a protest because they're experiencing the trauma, as well as a protest that the relationship is detaching.
Mm-hmm. And so, what would be three things you might do with this client to help restore their sense of belief in themselves?
Well, I think the first of all is doing the exercise on establishing boundaries.
Okay.
To help them understand, again, what's going to feel safe for them. And really focus on why those things are going to make them feel safe. If we're able to sort of like turn that direction instead of towards the addict, but into themselves, they feel, again, more empowered. They are able to feel at least manageable, okay,
mm-hmm.
that they could manage this enough to get on with the day.
Mm-hmm.
And the other piece, again, is really helping them notice their bodily sensations. Because, you know, normally what we try to do is think our way out of this. And that's really the top-down approach,
mm-hmm.
in which we're not noticing what's happening to us physically. We're not noticing in terms of our breathing, our tone of voice, et cetera, that we are escalating. We're becoming more and more reactive. We're protesting. So I would help them start to notice what goes on. So I work on some bodily issues like some visualization techniques,
mm-hmm.
help them to stay present and to help them get reacquainted with their body in terms of when it's starting to get activated or feel reactive. And then once we get to that point, then helping them find that voice. Because
well, that makes
when
total
we get to that point, the voice is a lot calmer.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know so oftentimes the addict wants forgiveness, but my goodness, that takes months and months and months and months of work on both of their parts, the partner and the addict, to begin that forgiveness process. Because trust has to be rebuilt. And before trust can be rebuilt, boundaries and communication and all sorts of things have to occur. So it really is a process.
Well, it is a process because in doing so is that if we just give the forgiveness to the addict, then it's really done blindly. And normally what I notice with some clients is that they, yes, they want to forgive their husband, girlfriend, wife, et cetera,
mm-hmm.
But it's that desperate attempt to try to hold on to the relationship. But at the same moment, they're still feeling very angry. Okay? So they're not really making sense of how they feel. So in order for really to have that forgiveness, there has to be some sort of intimacy that's going on, and that intimacy doesn't start with the relationship. It really starts in terms of getting to know oneself, again, with the boundaries, being more intimate with oneself, identifying one's needs. And then we could expand in terms of the relationship and try to develop some trust that maybe trust enough, not
mm-hmm.
complete trust.
Mm-hmm.
I always look at from the perspective is that I am enough. It's not saying that I am perfect. It's not saying I'm better than you or lower than you. It's kind of some of Pia Melody's teaching.
Absolutely.
You know, in one upsmanship and one down. And part of this is that we have to feel that we're enough. And again, it takes a while to get to that point. And until you're able to get to that point, it's really hard to forgive the other person because you're still feeling inadequate yourself.
Well, and, you know, I absolutely agree that affirmations are so important, and I love the Pia Melody stuff because they're affirmations that you can believe as opposed to saying, I am a brilliant woman who is capable of achieving everything. To say, I am enough exactly as I am helps to put it back into focus. And
you know, it does, because then it is not talking about perfection. It's just saying that I am enough, I have enough, I have
mm-hmm.
what I need. And
yeah.
if we move to that perspective, then we have abundance. We don't need more.
You have made it your mission. You've worked over 20 years in this field, and you have made it your mission to educate others. You're a wonderful presenter. I'm sure your workshops are the best. Go ahead and give us the website of the Men's Center in case people want to contact you directly.
Thank you so much. That is www.themenscenter, themenscenter.net.
Excellent. And, of course, if people want to buy this book, they can do it through Amazon or they can go to Gentle Path and put in Facing Heartbreak, Steps to Recovery for Partners of Sex Addicts. It's brand new. How many months has it been out?
It's about a month and a half, and it is just we're getting such great reviews from clinicians in the field as well as the feedback from partners that we work with. I mean, again, I run the group, what's so nice about this is that, you know, the women are in different parts of their recovery, and they could look back, like, to the first chapter, and they say, wow, that's where I was.
Mm-hmm.
Now I know that this is where I am right now. It's, again, one of those affirmations that I'm making progress,
mm-hmm.
you know, as well as, wow, that's how I'm feeling. This is normal. Someone else is experiencing it. It has a name, so I don't feel as isolated that it's not about just me.
Yeah.
So it's been an excellent resource, and I'm just getting great feedback from everyone.
Well, I so appreciate you coming on the air and sharing a little bit about this book. It is amazing. I'm already starting to use it with my clients, and what I know to be true is that partners are in great pain, and they really want skills to get them through this crisis and end up being survivors as opposed to victims. And so thank you so much for coming on the air today, and I encourage everybody to go out and get Facing Heartbreak, Steps to Recovery for Partners of Sex Addicts. Tony, it's been a real pleasure to talk with you tonight.
It's been my pleasure, too, and thank you again.
You're welcome. Have a great day.
You too, now.
Okay, so I would highly encourage anybody who is struggling with their partner's addiction to get Facing Heartbreak, Steps to Recovery for Partners of Sex Addicts. It's an amazing workbook, and it really does give you the tools to make your life different and to create the kind of skills that you need to rebuild your relationship, to rebuild yourself, whether you stay with your partner or not. You know, it's not about tools to keep the marriage together or the relationship together. It's about the partners getting stronger themselves. And as I say every show, I want you to fearlessly have the courage to be yourself. Next week we have Mark Smith on, who's going to be talking about a new ebook that he has written on abandonment and attachment. And so I'm really going to look forward to that. Mark's got a lot of skill in absolutely working with addicts. So you have a great week. You send me emails at carolcoach@aol.com. And thanks so much for listening to the show.